My name is Dr. Monica Faulkner. I'm the Associate Director of the Child and Family Research Institute at UT Austin, and I am the evaluator for a federally funded program through ACF, one of the PREP projects. And through that work, I've really kind of honed in on this trauma-informed perspective, and I almost wanted to come give you a hug because I feel you. And so I'm going to tell you kind of what we found. I did present on Monday more of our quantitative data. This is really talking more about our qualitative stuff and where we're headed with our sexual health educators. So I have no disclosures. My objectives here are really to talk about the importance of trauma-informed sex education and talk about some of the cultural attitudes that are pervasive in these EBPs that people are using. From my perspective as a social worker, I knew just anecdotally that there were high rates of pregnancy among foster youth. There just hasn't been anything out there to really address it with that population. So this project that we're working on has given me the opportunity to look at how do you prevent pregnancy with youth who are disconnected, youth who are in foster care, youth who are in juvenile detention, substance use, and homeless shelters. So, because we really don't have a lot of information about what evidence works. A lot of these evidence-based curricula have been normed within school settings with youth who I don't think are as high risk as some of the youth that I'm trying to capture. And so our aim is really to reduce the disproportionality there. So our project, which I'll just tell you about briefly, in Texas, I love it. Your presentation fed so well into mine because Texas was one of those states that was always red. It's not a good time to be in Texas and work on sexual health issues. We're not required to have sex ed in school, and what kids get is just oftentimes wrought with things that are questionably factual, like getting a lot of sleep will prevent pregnancy. It was in one of our textbooks, but the word condom wasn't. So Texas is interesting. So juvenile detention centers, we are in two juvenile detention centers right now with our program, a homeless shelter, three foster care agencies are actually all shelters, and one residential treatment center that's serving girls with substance use issues. And we asked the sites, what curricula do you want to use? Because the federal government says we have to use evidence-based curricula, what do you want to use? So they picked Making Proud Choices and Be Proud, Be Responsible, which are very similar in nature. Making Proud Choices is a little bit longer. Be Proud, Be Responsible is shorter. And so some of the agencies were like, we need you to get in and get out, so we want short. So it wasn't even content or quality of content. It was just get in and get out because these kids are so transient. So I'm just going to focus on our process evaluation, which has been very interesting. It's ongoing because we are in the second year of a third-year project. So we've conducted four interviews with sexual health educators, and our sexual health educators are awesome Planned Parenthood folks that we've been able to contract with to facilitate these curricula. And we have also conducted interviews with the six agencies that we're working with. And we've only been able to do one focus group with youth, but youth voice is always very important to me, and we're going to get out there and do more. We're just planning those right now. So I have two different quotes up here. One is from an agency staff, and it really, I think, speaks to this trauma-informed approach. It's just a struggle from a treatment side, making sure that we have the proper things in place for debriefing or follow-up. We have kids that come from some rough situations, and it's challenging to throw them in a program like this, and it's just 6 hours of sex, sex, sex. And he was really speaking to the fact that we don't often know in these settings which youth have experienced particularly sexual trauma. We know that these kids have experienced trauma, but we're not really taking into account in these evidence-based programs that this is a huge part of these youth's life. And the agencies that we're going into and we're just, you know, spotting and targeting sexual health education, they're having to follow up with therapy and counseling to kind of make sure that that these youth are incorporating this into their treatment. The other quote is from a youth. With our focus group with youth, it was very interesting. It was younger youth, and they really like to write us notes. And so I have a stack full of notes for my field notes. But this is one that a youth actually wrote on a dry erase board. It says, they need to learn how to keep their legs closed, and because they are players and also because they fake. I don't even know the last part. But she had been through the curricula, and this was still what she was saying about sex. And so to me, I was like, well, okay, something's not okay here. Something's off. And I really think what's off is the fact that we're not addressing the fact that these youth have serious misconceptions about sexual health and healthy sexuality because of the trauma that they've experienced. So other things that we heard from the staff and professionals in the settings were that they're very anxious about talking with youth about sex. And if you're a parent, and I know I'm a parent, it's very awkward. So you're talking about talking with kids who are not yours in a setting where you have some liability issues about what you can say to them. So they're very anxious. And so oftentimes the message that was getting relayed to youth was, well, that's just not what I would do. You know, so there's judgment and shame on top of that, of that's just not what I would do. Wait. But also the agencies and the sexual health educators were telling us the realities of these youth are really intense. They don't know how many have been sexually abused because a lot of youth, I know a lot of youth I particularly worked with, would age out of foster care and while they're walking out the door say, oh, by the way, I never told you this, but this happened to me. We also know that in our substance use facility that's serving girls, that about half of the girls they've estimated have been involved with sex trafficking and prostitution. So again, these evidence-based curricula, are they really getting to those girls? And are we really giving them the tools that they need? They also, a lot of the kids are sexually active. We can see that in our quantitative data. And a lot of them are reporting, like at the juvenile detention facilities, they screen the kids. They do a very thorough health screening that includes STI screening. So they know that these kids are coming in with STIs. But they're not getting any education about that, per se, unless they're going through our program. So we know that there are issues. And this is kind of where I think we are with trauma-informed or with evidence-based curricula. So everybody laughs about this, so, and this is from Mean Girls, the quote, don't have sex because you will get pregnant and die. But then you look at our actual evidence-based curricula, and these are two quotes that I pulled out from them. One is, even though buying condoms may be embarrassing, you have to work through it because pregnancy can be more embarrassing. Well, I know that I've worked with girls who have been sexually abused who have been in my office holding the babies from that abuse. And I think that that shames them. The other quote that I pulled out, again, these are both from evidence-based curricula. If you get an STD from sexual activity you engaged in willingly, you should be upset with yourself because it is your responsibility to be protective. So there's some truth in that. The message is we want youth to take control, right, and be in control. But that word willingly for a kid who has experienced sexual abuse is very convoluted. What does that mean, right? Because the curricula don't necessarily go into consent. So we're just throwing that word out willingly. If you did it willingly and you somehow said yes, then it's your fault. So our current approach is really steeped in talking about danger and risk and scare tactics, but I think that this potential for trauma-informed care is there. I think that it's often overlooked, not just by sexual health providers. I don't want to put the blame on them or anyone who develops curricula. I think those are very important. But also, from a child welfare perspective where I'm coming from, my folks that I train don't want to talk about sex. They are utterly fearful of talking about sex. So we've got it on both sides where we have sexual health educators who we interview telling us, I don't want a girl to disclose to me that she's been sexually abused because then I've got to do something about that and I don't know exactly what to do. And then we've got agency workers who are saying, I don't want them to ask me about methods of birth control because I actually don't know. So really where we're going is pairing those two things. So from our qualitative data, we went back with our program folks and said, let's figure this out. How can we develop a training? How can we really do green light adaptations in these EDPs so that we can make it more positive? And so where we're kind of headed with this is we want to really take into consideration that these EDPs have very subtle messages in them relating to danger and risk and very few messages that relate to just positive, healthy sexuality. And we also want to consider the gender and sexual diversity of the youth, and that is often lost in a lot of these EDPs. The role play scenarios are often boy-girl, and it's just not taking into consideration the fact that you have LGBTQ youth in your room, you have transgender youth in your room. And that message is lost. So we've worked a lot and developed a guide, which I can't go into with 15 minutes, but of how to make some green light adaptations to those curricula. And then we know there's this huge focus on social determinants of health. Trauma is absolutely a social determinant of health, yet it is absent from sexual health and what we're doing with youth. We're not taking into consideration the fact that trauma impacts when they're starting to have sex, the unprotected sex, sex with multiple partners, or the fact that people are having sex for money and they're 14. And so we have to take that into consideration with sexual health education. So the training that we've developed for our facilitators and also for our agencies has really focused on this framework, which I'm constantly tweaking because there's just not a lot out there. There are a lot of presentations I've been to where people are saying, we need to look at trauma, we need to talk about this, but nobody's really pointed in the direction of, well, what do we do? So this is one framework we've used to train people, and it really focuses on accepting reality. So when we're talking to sexual health educators, we're talking to them about the impact of trauma and really educating them on that. But when I'm talking to agency providers and social workers that are more from my field, I really have to start with people have sex and they are under 18, and they get real uncomfortable and start fidgeting in their chairs. So then we go into shifting the focus and trying to teach that sex is a normal part of being a human being. And our goal does not necessarily need to be on preventing things, but on teaching and flipping that to how to be a healthy person. And this is a part of being a healthy person. And then we force people to kind of get comfortable with it. We kind of force our sexual health educators to talk about what they would do in those situations where sexual abuse is disclosed, because if you are going into foster care agencies, it's going to happen. But on the flip side, I've developed kind of a developmental framework for social workers on how to talk to youth of different ages about sex and messages you want to send and what you want to stay away from. And in general, these can kind of be summed up. I'll skip this because I'm running out of time. With some of these just tips and guidelines, what to avoid, using should, shouldn't, always and never, scare tactics, really look at the language you're using in teaching youth, watch for shaming, particularly about teen pregnancy, because you don't know what has happened to that person. So saying that an STI is the worst thing in the world to ever happen to anyone is horrible. If you're that person who has an STI in the room, why would you listen? So we know human beings cannot learn in a state of fear, and yet our sex education is steeped in fear. We also want to make sure that youth voices and choices are supported so that youth are given an opportunity to really ask those tough questions. I feel like our educators are great at doing that. And being inclusive of gender and sexual diversity. And then finally, what I really want to touch on is enthusiastic consent. So these curricula, I think, really kind of miss the boat on no means no. I mean, that, okay, well, let's send that message. But what if we flip it and say yes means yes, and we need to really talk to kids about what enthusiastic consent is. So it's not just a one conversation where I'm saying no. It's I need to be saying yes, that this is okay with me. And to get kids to that point, I think we've got to be able to address the trauma that they've experienced. So that's a quick rundown on our data and what I usually do in a three-hour presentation, like really minimized here. But hopefully you guys can take it back and it'll be useful. So happy to answer any questions. You're Planned Parenthood, aren't you? Yeah, your folks already have them. Yeah, so, yep. I think they are ready to be shared, at least most of them. We're creating a guidebook. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was actually not done by me, but a colleague who was very familiar with doing the adaptation. So she literally went word by word through the two that we're using and handed our facilitators a sheet of this is the language we're going to use. But she was also developing a guide just in general of how to look for what language, and she's not quite finished with it yet. Yes. It did go through, and it did go through that whole whatever process they make you go through to determine that it was okay. So, do you know that much?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that was fun with the IRB. I went through about 6 different IRBs to collect data from these sites. So there was my IRB at UT, site-specific IRBs, and then a lot of kids are in custody of our state, so I had to get the state's permission, and that involved some pretty extensive background checks and everything that everybody had to go through. Even my little undergrad who enters data for me had to do it, so, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm trying.
Because really, when you go back to that slide of all the things that we really should be doing, if we want to have a trauma-based perspective, we should be doing those things in the classroom as well.
I know.
Not only because there might be somebody there who happens to have had trauma. And of course, I'm using my community, but clearly we know that. But all of those shoulds and all of those messages are just as damaging.
I know.
Who are trying.
I would love to go talk to teachers. I feel like we're just starting this, so it's kind of we're walking in the door. But we have had a lot of like school social workers come to presentations. But I agree, it needs to be every adult really needs to look at what they're saying to kids. Okay, thank you.